When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with purchase.
ES Audio.
Hello, I'm Nick Curtis, the Evening Standard's Chief Theatre Critic, and this is the Evening Standard's Theatre Podcast. Every Sunday, we'll be talking about two shows currently on in London and giving you our honest, unvarnished opinions. This is your go-to theatre guide, your little black book, if you will, of what's on in the West End and across London right now. Today, we're coming to you from the Shaftesbury Theatre in the heart of London's West End. This week, I'm joined by Nancy Durrant, the Evening Standard's culture editor.
Yes, from the actual stage, which is a slightly unnerving experience for a theatre critic, I'd have thought.
I always find it, I'm always quite excited, actually, when I get to see the guts of the theatre rather than just sitting out in the stalls. And I had a tour of this place last week because it's been subject to a refurbishment costing over £10 million.
Crikey.
Which has included a new fly tower on the roof, so the box that they fly all the sets in from, and lots of new ladies' loos that I know a lot
yes.
of our audience members will be very happy to hear about. So this theatre is currently home to Anne Juliet, the compilation musical that I think we both enjoyed, and I think everybody seems to enjoy.
Literally everyone, I think.
Literally everybody loves Anne Juliet. It's also, interesting thing, fact fans, it's the last theatre that was built on Shaftesbury Avenue in 1911 and was originally called the New Prince's Theatre. It became the Shaftesbury Theatre after the original Shaftesbury Theatre was destroyed in the war by bombs.
Also, you told me earlier that it is the only theatre in London where you can retract the roof, which is James Bond-tastic.
It is James Bond-tastic. It is one of, apparently, only two theatres in the UK where the roof can be retracted, initially for ventilation purposes. This was, of course, the days when people were still smoking and when there were still limelights in theatres, so things got incredibly hot. They apparently do occasionally open it when they do tech rehearsals here, just to give the technicians a bit of sky to look
nice.
At. Nice. Anyway, well, welcome to the Evening Standard's first ever theatre podcast.
Woo-hoo.
Very exciting for all of us, and I hope for all of you out there. We're going to be reviewing two shows every week, as I said earlier, and this week we're starting off with Tammy Faye. This is a musical about the 1980s televangelist Tammy Faye Baker, who with her husband founded a religious TV channel funded by Ted Turner and came to a somewhat sticky end. She was also a gay icon, rather unusually in the televangelical world. And this is, well, this is an extraordinary project, really. The book, that is, The Words That Are Not the Lyrics, is written by James Graham, the author of Sherwood, which was very popular on TV last year, and
yeah.
of
Ink
Countless.
As well.
Ink as well.
Quiz.
This also,
house, loads of stuff.
He's the most amazingly prolific author that we have at the moment. The music is written by none other than Elton John, and the lyrics by Jake Shears out of the Scissor Sisters. It's a really, really strange and wonderful show. What did you think of it, Nancy?
I really, really enjoyed it. It was a really sort of fun experience to watch from start to finish. I thought that the performances were fantastic. It's just, it never lets up its energy. And the lead, Katie Braben, who plays Tammy Faye, and also Andrew Rannells as Jim Baker, I thought they were just fantastic. They really held the stage.
I thought Katie Braben was extraordinary. She has the most amazingly powerful voice.
Astonishing.
It feels like she could sort of knock down the pearly gates with it, doesn't she? Andrew Rannells, I thought, was very good as well. He was very recognisable from Book of Mormon and had the same sort of slightly sweaty, slightly anxious demeanour that he had in that. I think he's obviously sort of cornered the market in slightly screwball religious types.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it's for a musical that's about essentially religion and right-wing politics, it's amazingly good fun.
It's quite a strange combination, but there's so much to this story. It really packs in a hell of a lot. I think they do it really well. I think they do, the set is gorgeous, and they do the sort of televangelists on the screens at the back really beautifully. I think it's really constantly engaging.
It's beautifully done. It's quite low tech. It's almost like a sort of Muppet show, isn't it? With people popping out of TV screens and to give their opinions or to preach at you. What I find interesting is that I think it's approaching the political situation that we have in America here, which is very, very hard right Republican views backed up by ostensibly religious beliefs. And I think James Graham is essentially finding the seeds of that back in the late 70s and 80s.
I think you're right. And his current play, which is about to open at the West, in West End, of course, is Best of Enemies, which picks up that kind of how did we start with this kind of incredibly combative media situation that we're in now, especially in the US. And so I think he's been thinking about this stuff before. But I kind of feel like that is quite oblique, as you say. And I did wonder, like, this is a really strange story in a way for a British team, although not Jake Shears, of course, but the other two, to pick up and run with. Because I think if you are a Brit and you haven't seen the film that came out in 2021 with Jessica Chastain, which is called The Eyes of Tammy Faye, you would not have the faintest clue who Tammy Faye Baker is. I didn't know who she was. We don't have televangelists. It's a very, very almost alien world to us. And it was just a really interesting choice. I think the one thing about that is that I assume that what they want to do is take it to Broadway, which at least is, yes, a kind of, you know, a kind of chink into how theatre works on a kind of global level. But it is a bit odd.
I suspect you're right about taking it to Broadway. I wonder if this is a slight generational thing, because given that I'm a bit older than you, I remember this being in the ether in the 80s, the sort of scandals that hit not just the Bakers, but all the televangelists, which is sort of rolled out during the course of the plot here, isn't it? You learn where they've all betrayed their supposed ideals. Jim Baker was accused of seducing, to put it generously, an aide, certainly, in an unhealthy fashion. He was sent to prison for quite some time.
Well, that was for fraud as well.
That was for fraud as well, yes. Yes, there's. it has to be said that I think even though this musical casts Tammy Faye as some sort of heroine, it's quite generous to her, I think we both felt.
It's very forgiving. I mean, you know, I think it's clear that she didn't quite know everything that was going on, but there's an element of choice in that, I think. It's like, oh, I'll just let Jim deal with that so that I don't have to. But also, she did buy everything in sight, you know, diamonds and furs and shoes. I mean, she had a closet like Imelda Marcos. There is a level at which I think blame could be apportioned in a way that isn't necessarily so much in this one. She's very much the heroine, as you say.
Yes, I agree. I think there's a lovely line, isn't there, about how much she spent on eyeliner, given that her eyes were apparently one of the great parts of her appeal. And she had this extraordinary connection to the audience, that she would literally reach out towards the camera and people would feel that she was sort of touching their souls. And it is sort of interesting, though, that she did become a gay icon, partly by having guests who... well, particularly one particular guest who, a pastor who'd contracted AIDS, was on her show. And she demonstrated extraordinary empathy that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
Yeah, well, especially not on a televangelist channel. I mean, that was absolutely just completely unheard of. Among all of the others that were kind of preaching fire and brimstone for homosexuals at the time, it was an extraordinary thing to do and very risky. That was definitely a wonderful thing to do. But I do think that the story is so kind of knotty of these people that I never say this, but I think it could have benefited from being 15 minutes longer, just to let the story breathe a bit, because keeping the running time reasonably tight for a musical, I think may have sort of knocked off some of the sharper edges that could have stayed a bit honed.
Maybe you're right. It is very sort of brisk and lively, and it sort of barrels along, doesn't it?
Should we just talk about the songs for a minute?
Yes, they're very sly and very witty, a lot of them. Particularly there's a number called He's Inside Me, which is obviously about the Holy Spirit, but sort of also not.
Really, really not.
Promised Me is a cracking number. Look How Far We've Fallen, I thought was great, with all the evangelists at the end.
Yeah.
talking about their moral decline. Well, Katie Braben just knocks it out of the park with the penultimate number, If You Came to See Me Cry.
Oh, yeah, that's one that just, it sort of sticks in your head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Completely. And it's just, it's such a great performance, I think.
It is. It's one of those really barnstorming numbers like No Way I'm Leaving Without You from Dreamgirls that just sort of knocks the whole audience back on their heels.
Yeah, definitely. No, I thought it was fantastic.
Right, let's go to the ads. Coming up, was Marvellous at the new At Soho Place Theatre able to dismantle my reservations, and did it live up to its title? We'll be back after this.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Welcome back. Let's dive straight into our second pick today, which is Marvellous at the At Soho Place Theatre.
Literally the worst theatre name in the world.
The worst theatre name they could possibly have come up with. Just to explain, it's at the ampersand symbol, then Soho Place, all one word. So it's called At Soho Place.
It's deeply naff, but we're going to just stick with it.
It's the first purpose-built new theatre in the West End for 50 years. Mm-hmm. It's a very generous auditorium. I'm struggling to think of anything nice I can say about the building itself beyond that, really, which feels sort of like a Dubai five-star departure lounge.
Yeah, it's a slightly weird. I mean, I'm hoping that it will kind of come into its own a little bit. And obviously, it has literally only just opened. But I must admit that when I was there, which was a Saturday, and only the stalls were occupied, there was still a queue outside the ladies at the interval. And I don't see why you would build a new theatre that doesn't have enough ladies' loos.
It's extraordinary.
I literally cannot believe it.
Particularly as this is built by the only large theatre group run by a woman, Mika Burns.
It's madness. Amazing. But you know what? The auditorium is lovely.
It is lovely, and it'll be interesting to see when a few of the corners have been knocked off it. I mean, a lot of these new buildings have to be run in, and people have to find out how to use them, and presumably some flexibility has been built into the structure. It's been built by very accomplished theatre architects. But anyway, we're here to talk about the show that's
in it.
Marvellous, the opening production, which is a strange and rather charming show. I'll summarise it as best I can. It's about Neil Nello Baldwin, who is a neurodiverse chap from Staffordshire, who variously has become a lay preacher, a mascot for his local football team, a greeter for over 50 years at his local university, I think. He was a clown. Yes, that's very important to the plot. He was a clown, I think. And generally seems to be a man who has not let anything stop him do what he wants to do.
I know, it's quite wonderful. And there was actually a film made about him as well, which was also called Marvellous, I believe, which I haven't seen, but that had Toby Jones in the leading role.
That's right. It's based on his autobiography, co-written with a friend of his who was mayor of Stoke, I believe, also called Marvellous, and it is rather marvellous and unusual as a show. The character of Neil is initially split up amongst a number of different actors, many of them non-neurotypical. And then the action is sort of subverted by the main actor playing Neil, who springs out of the audience and starts bossing the action around and interrupting people and stopping them doing their long-prepared prose poem speeches. Thank God, yes, we want fewer of those on stage, really. I found it rather charming. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was lovely. The actor that plays real Neil, and indeed the other actors who play him and the other characters throughout the play, they all sort of arrived in the auditorium a little bit before the start of the show and just started chatting to people in a way that I think is probably very, very similar to what Neil would have done.
Yes.
And Neil, by the way, is there. He was there on the night I went, which was just a Saturday, you know.
And the night he was there on press night. Yes.
I think he's there every night. And, you know, he stands up at the end. I think he's got an OBE.
It is an OBE, I think, yes.
And he's wearing that, and he's just there because he loves it so much. And it's actually just really, really lovely to be in that room with that story being told, with the person who it's being told about. It's just really nice.
It is.
Very kind and generous and forgiving. And warm.
Yes, yeah. It's very warm. It's also, it's not what you'd expect the first purpose-built theatre in the West End for 50 years to be opened with. You'd sort of expect a musical, or you'd expect star names, you'd expect something blockbustery, and this is entirely the opposite of that. It's about a bloke from Staffordshire.
Yeah, exactly, who didn't do anything that a lot of people would think significant. You know, it's like his achievements are immense in his life, but like you know he's not won the Nobel Peace Prize, he's not sort of changed the world for women in Afghanistan, you know what I mean? He's just a bloke who has lived his life in a lovely way despite quite a lot of people not thinking he would be able to do anything.
Yes,
that's just a really nice story.
And it's also it started at the New Vic Theatre in Staffordshire, this show. It's been brought in from there, and there's something quite sort of sweet about that as well. Somehow it sort of shows how London and the regions are interconnected.
Yeah.
It's quite nice having a show that asks London theatre goers to sort of think outside their box.
Well, yeah, definitely.
I mean, there were a lot of local football references that went straight over my head.
I mean,
completely.
Well over my head,
yes.
Definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
Football tends to go over my head anyway, but but particularly sort of football from the Midlands.
Yeah, exactly. I would be really interested to know what the response of neurodiverse people and their families and friends. Because I think it's incredibly chaotic, this show. And at first I was like, is that deliberate? Is that by mistake? Is it a bit of both? But I think that I've sort of been thinking about it since, and I've kind of realised that the way it's structured, it's maybe more of a reflection of its subject than I thought. Like, it's not just his story, it's also a reflection of the way that he thinks and sees the world.
Yes.
And I think that's quite exceptional.
Yes, it's very deliberately non-linear, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole thing, and just, it's like experience is coming at you from every angle in it, and there is, you never know when something is going to be interrupted or going to take a complete 90-degree turn into something totally different.
Yeah, and there are bits, I mean, I found myself thinking at certain points, like, why are we being told about this entirely inconsequential event? Even if it was just a few lines, I was like, well, okay, fine. But then when I thought about that, I think that what that reflects is the importance of certain things to someone who has a different type of brain, right? So, like, he sees value in things that I perhaps have not been trained to see value in. You know, like I was saying, you know, it's not, we kind of expect plays to be made about people who've made great achievements. But in fact, I think the values that come out of this play, you wrote about this in your review, are, you know, be happy, make other people happy, be kind.
Yes.
Which is just literally all that matters.
It's not a bad message to take away from you at the end of the evening.
Great.
And I should also say that Neil Baldwin has, of course, not ruled out becoming Prime Minister someday.
Well, I mean, quite right.
So let's all cling to that hope, shall we?
Yes, exactly.
So that's Marvellous at Soho Place, still the worst name
still
in London
theatre.
A new 602-seat flexible playhouse, the first purpose-built theatre to be built in the West End for 50 years. So there we are, a very good week for the first Evening Standard Theatre podcast. Two shows which got 4-star ratings out of 5.
Yeah.
Let's hope next week is just as good.
Mm,
thank you, Nancy.
See. Thank you.
This has been the Evening Standards Theatre Podcast. I'm Nick Curtis.
And I'm Nancy Durrant.
You can find us online at standard.co.uk/culture. The Leader Podcast will be back tomorrow from 4 p.m. and we'll see you again next Sunday for a brand new episode.